I said, well, if you get a book published on anything, you're an expert on it, so I guess I'm an expert. He said, well, how do you account for theories like that? And I said, paresis. And he said, what? He thought I was going to give him some complicated psychological theory. I told him, it takes 20 years for syphilis to turn into paresis. By that time, you're the head of the corporation. And if you look at the membership of the John Birch Society, you'll find they're all middle-aged men who are heads of corporations. They've got to the stage where the syphilis is turned into paresis, and that's how they develop these elaborate theories about Rockefeller working in collaboration with the communists in Moscow to screw the middle-class businessmen in Des Moines, Iowa. Nobody who didn't have paresis would possibly imagine David Rockefeller and Gorbachev sitting down to plot against people in Des Moines. But once you've got paresis, that makes perfect sense to you. That's what keeps fundamentalism alive. One of the major tasks of the Discordian Society is to make every man, woman, and child on the planet a pope. We've decided that Kirby Hensley did not go far enough in trying to make everybody a clergy entity. We want to make everybody a pope. And so we've been distributing pope cards for nearly 20 years now. And if you buy my book, Illuminatus, you'll find a pope card in there. You can cut it out and put it in your wallet and purse, and that makes you a pope. If you don't want to read all the way through Illuminatus, you can buy the Discordian Bible, Principia Discordia, from Lumpanics Unlimited, and cut out the pope card in there. The pope card has also been reproduced in Margot Adler's book, Drawing Down the Moon, which is a study of contemporary goddess-oriented religions. And she has a whole chapter on Discordianism and includes a pope card, so you can cut that one out. Between the pope cards distributed by Discordian missionaries and the pope cards that got distributed through the circulation of those books, over 500,000 popes were created. And then, then the Vatican recently announced that bishops can give indulgences over television. They never were allowed to do that before. An indulgence is a big thing if you're a Catholic. It means you spend less time in purgatory. And believe me, you don't want to go to purgatory. It's almost as bad as Passaic, New Jersey. So now bishops can give indulgences over television. Of course, there's some debate about this. In most countries in Europe, you have to pay a license for your TV set. And the question is, if you haven't paid your license fee, is the indulgence valid? Or if you make a videotape of the indulgence and play it for your friends, is it transferable? Or if you keep playing the videotape over and over, do you get perpetual indulgence? That's another interesting religion that cropped up recently. The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. That's a group of transvestites in San Francisco who go around dressed as nuns. And I keep hoping they'll make a visit to Ireland sometime, because Ireland badly needs to see them. They had two lesbian nuns on Irish television last year, and a circle of pious Catholics formed around the television studio and said the rosary continually all through the program to exorcise the demons within. And I didn't get a whole circle around here today, but maybe next time I'll be luckier. At least I got a leaflet announcing me. Since the Catholic Church has decided bishops can give indulgences over television, I decided the Discordian Society can create popes over the radio. And so I was on a show in England in January, only a month ago, midweek, BBC midweek, and they have an estimated listenership of 3 million. And I announced that everybody listening to the show was now a pope and had full authority to pontificate on all subjects. So now we've got 3.5 million Discordian popes, and the number is still rising. And everybody here is now automatically a pope. So, and you're all just as infallible as those nudniks out in the street there. There are mom cards for feminists who object to the word Pope because it has a male root to it. And you can get a mom card by getting in contact with the Wiccan Discordians in Palo Alto, California, if you can find them. And this card says you're a genuine and authorized mom instead of a pope, if you want that. We've sent the Pope card. We sent the Pope card to the anti-Pope in southern France, thereby making him an authentic Hofstadter strange loop. He's both the Pope and an anti-Pope at the same time. We also sent one to the gent in Rome who thinks he's the only Pope. So now he's two Popes, a Catholic Pope and a Discordian Pope. But that isn't the first time we have moved in on Catholic turf. Back under John the 23rd, who must have been a Discordian with a number like that, under John the 23rd, they threw out some 300 saints they admitted were mythical and didn't belong in the Catholic Church, including Santa Claus. And the Discordian Society accepted them all. They're now all Discordian saints. If the Catholics won't have them, we will. I was recently in Des Moines, Iowa, just before I came here, and I found another new church that has just appeared. It's called the Church of the Unconvinced. And their first activity is to open a bookstore called Visions, which has flotation tanks. They have two flotation tanks and a lot of books on mysticism and Kabbalah. And so you can either read books to give you visions, or you can go downstairs and float in the tank and have visions. And their second activity was to bring me to Des Moines, which I thought was rather nice. And so that's all I know about the Church of the Unconvinced. They never explained their dogmas to me, if they have dogmas. Yes? That's not a bad idea. They may try that. The Discordian Society, maybe they don't have dogmas. The Discordian Society doesn't have dogmas. We have catmas. A dogma is something declared by a single pope of a single, where there's only one pope. Where you've got 3.5 million popes, you can't have dogmas, so we've got catmas instead. So every Discordian is entirely infallible, but only about what's going on in his or her own nervous system. And that's what a catma is. Then there's the Javacrucians. The Javacrucians are have you seen their ads? A coffee break in eternity? I don't know whether they're a new religion or not. They claim they're not. They say not a religious organization. But the Javacrucian revelation is that if the first thing in the morning you get up and make a pot of coffee, if you raise the coffee and face the rising sun, just like a Freemason, just like a lot of occult groups, you face the rising sun, raise the coffee to your lips and take a sip, and then put it down, and then you say profoundly, "God, I needed that." You will then be in a state of mind to deal with all the problems of the day. This is the American coffee ceremony to rival the Japanese tea ceremony and give us an autochthonous mystical tradition. There's a secret Discordian teaching which I am now at liberty to reveal, which is even stronger than that one. This is the secret toad ritual. That is, if you eat a live toad as soon as you get up in the morning, nothing worse will happen to you all day. Now there's the Church of the Subgenius, which claims to have 200,000 members. I don't know whether they're exaggerating or not, but I saw an issue of the LA Weekly recently where they had a monster convention in Los Angeles. And it said 30,000 monsters attended. And so apparently the Church of the Subgenius is really growing. And that's based on the Discordian Society together with Madison Avenue techniques. It seems to have been invented by two advertising executives in Dallas. The Church of the Subgenius includes practically everything. And it even has a synthesis of Discordianism and Taoism. For those of you who are into heavy metaphysics, Taoism divides the whole universe into yin and yang, the dark, fecund yin forces and the bright, shocking yang forces. And Discordianism divides everything into the Hodge and the Podge. The Hodge is symbolized by the Pentagon, which represents the attempt to create order, which always leads to higher and higher chaos. And the Podge is symbolized by the apple of discord, which symbolizes the apple that Ares threw into the banquet on Olympus, which started the Trojan War, and the apple that Eve picked that started the evolution of humanity, and the apple that used to disappear from the stage of the Flatbush Burlesque Theater in Brooklyn when Peaches Browning did her split on top of it. And everybody is a member either of the House of the Rising Hodge or the House of the Rising Podge, which makes Discordianism the only universal religion. Because if you're a member of the House of the Rising Hodge, symbolized by the Pentagon, you oppose Discordianism. So therefore, you're part of Discordianism because Discordianism is based on discord. Ergo, those people out there protesting against me are part of the Discordian Church because they're protesting against the Discordian revelation. They are popes of the House of the Rising Hodge. Those who, on the other hand, who accept the Discordian revelation are popes of the House of the Rising Podge. In either case, the two balances out. You have no Hodge without Podge and no Podge without Hodge. The Church of the Subgenius has improved on this by looking into Gestalt therapy. And Gestalt therapy points out that wherever you see a figure, there's always a ground behind it, right? Some of you have been to Esalen, right? There's always a figure-ground relationship. Well, what is the ground? Nobody knows what the ground is. Well, Buddha said 2,500 years ago, the ground is nothing, right? Anybody? Yeah, that's the Buddha's teaching. The ground is nothing, no thing. And so therefore, when every perception consists of something on a background of nothing. If you look at me, you see something, I hope, and then there's nothing as the frame. So the universe consists of both something and nothing. And this is much more profound than the Discordian hodgepodge, I have to admit, even though I'm a Discordian pope. And it's even more profound than the yin and the yang, I think, because if you get a deep intuitive understanding of the relation of something and nothing, then you're in a state of slack. And slack is even better than nirvana, because if you're in slack, you are in the balance point between something and nothing, and then you can get something for nothing. This was revealed to J.R. Bob Dobbs, the founder of the Church of the Subgenius, by L. Ron Hubbard on an elevator in Palm Beach, Florida in 1957. J.R. Bob Dobbs was only a humble aluminum siding salesman at that time, but it just took one meeting with L. Ron Hubbard, and he learned the secret of power and how to stand on the balance between something and nothing and get something for nothing. And he founded the Church of the Subgenius, and now he's one of the richest men in the world, but he still acts like a regular fella. Of course, it's very hard to see Bob these days because he's reached such a tremendous level of spiritual elevation that most people who've met him can't even remember the experience. It's like a UFO contact. There's total or partial amnesia, conjunctivitis and eye strain, nervous symptoms. Sometimes it requires hospitalization. And you almost inevitably, you're persecuted by the men in black afterwards. The men in black are agents of the conspiracy. The conspiracy is all the groups that's trying to stamp out the Church of the Subgenius. It consists of all the other religions in the world, the Rockefellers, the OPEC nations, and the people who put Hawaiian music in elevators, and all other evil and sinister forces like that. So if you've met Bob, they'll send the men in black around to persecute you. Don't be afraid. The men in black will come to your door pretending to be Jehovah's Witnesses, and they will try to get into your house. The thing to do is greet them in a friendly way and say, we're glad to see you. This is a Satanist temple. We were looking for subjects for a sacrifice, and we're glad you've arrived. This will absolutely guarantee you will never be bothered by Jehovah's Witnesses again. They send a report back to Kingdom Hall with your address on it, and nobody ever goes there again. It really works. This is not a put-on. It really works. They believe in that sort of stuff. The secret of power, I don't know whether it's safe to reveal this yet. I was up in Edmonton last year. I was staying at the OTO Lodge up there. I'm an outer head of the OTO. I'm an outer head of the OTO. When Carl Germer died, he was the last universally recognized outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis. When he died, he hadn't appointed a successor. So four people appointed themselves, announcing they had been appointed on the astral plane by Aleister Crowley. They skipped over Germer, went back behind Germer to Crowley, and they each announced, Crowley appointed me on the astral plane. Now, it's very hard to get evidence about what's happening on the astral plane that's universally cited. So you had four outer heads of the OTO for a long time until a group in London, a group of OTO members in London, read the Principia Discordia and got converted to Discordianism. So they decided to combine Discordianism with Thelema, which is the religion of the OTO. Thelema is based on Crowley's revelation, do what thou wilt shall be the hole in the floor, or something like that. And so they printed 1,000 cards saying the bearer of this card is a genuine and authorized outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis. And they sent them to 1,000 writers on the occult that they liked, including me. And so suddenly, instead of four outer heads of the Ordo Templi Orientis, there were 1,004. And now the Ordo Templi Orientis is part of the Discordian Society because nobody knows who's the outer head anymore. You don't have, most people, when there were only four, most people thought they could choose between them. But with 1,004, it gets hopelessly confusing. And most people have decided to appoint themselves the outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis and not bother with looking for outer heads, which I think is a good idea. Anyway, I was up in Edmonton staying at the OTO Lodge, and we heard on television that Roger Neesh had just acquired his 92nd Rolls Royce. And as some of you know, 93 is the number of the new aeon, according to the Kabbalah of Aleister Crowley, the main philosopher of the OTO. And I said, hey, Roger Neesh will soon have his 93rd Rolls Royce. Let's make him an outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis, too, when he gets his 93rd Rolls Royce. So they agreed, and they printed up a certificate making Roger Neesh an outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis, and they were going to send it to him as soon as he got his 93rd Rolls Royce. Well, I left Edmonton, and a few weeks later, I read Roger Neesh had just acquired his 93rd Rolls Royce, and the American government busted him. And he fled back to India. And I don't know if he ever received the certificate making him an outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis. He's living somewhere in the Himalayas now. And whether he knows he's an outer head of the Ordo Templi Orientis or not, I'm not sure at all. But Roger Neesh, I think, is one of the great exemplars of the philosophical tendencies that I am expounding here tonight. He understood the secret of power. When he started acquiring disciples, he sat down like many of us have. I've almost acquired disciples myself. I know what that's like. And Roger Neesh thought, what do I do with these idiots? And so he said, I'll tell them that they've all got to wear orange. You know, I invented a religion once where you got to pray in pig Latin while standing on one leg. Our way, our the fay, who way, art a, and Evan way, and so on, you know. And he says, they'll all wear orange. And so they all started wearing orange. And Roger Neesh thought, hey, this is funny. So then after a while, he came out of his the hut where he had his current Shakti. He came charging out and said, orange is out. You've all got to wear crimson now. So they all had to throw away their orange clothes and buy crimson clothes. And by then, Roger Neesh had figured out exactly and totally. He'd reached full philosophical illumination on the question of disciplehood. He knew just what disciples were and what they're good for. So he said, go out and get Rolls Royces for me. So they started bringing in Rolls Royces one after another, and he got up to 92 Rolls Royces. Then when he got to the Crowley in 93, the ceiling fell in for some reason. He didn't fully understand the secret of power, but at least he knew what a disciple is. A disciple is an asshole looking for a human being to attach itself to. That That basically is the secret of power, which L. Ron Hubbard revealed to J.R. Bob Dobbs on that elevator in Palm Springs, those many years ago. By the way, do you know that God spelled backwards is dog, but Bob spelled backwards is still Bob? Think it over. The secret of power. This is what made L. Ron Hubbard a millionaire. It made J.R. Bob Dobbs a millionaire. It explains why, after dozens of exposés of the involvement of the Vatican Bank in the heroin smuggling business, the Pope is still a millionaire and is still keeping the show on the road. The secret of power is this. Think now. You know how dumb the average guy is? Well, mathematically, by definition, half of them are even dumber than that. Thank you.
For additional copies of this recording, or to receive a complete catalog listing of transformational audio tapes, call Sounds True at 1-800-835-2246, extension 275, or write 1825 Pearl Street, Boulder, Colorado, 80302.